The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the question for this week came in. I accept that there is no permanent, unchanging I or self. This is evident. With this said, can it be accepted that there is a self or I that is impermanent, changing? Is it written that if there is a self or I, that that self or I would need to be permanent, unchanging in order for it to exist? If not, then could we accept a self or I as existing but impermanent, changing, to say that there is an impermanent, changing self? So this connects to a way that we tend to think about a sense of self. We tend to think about a sense of self, what the experience, what we tend to attribute or call a sense of self, is something that feels somehow stable. Whether or not it's permanently existing through all time, we tend to attribute some kind of stability to our experience, a sense that I have been here for this life. I was a child, I remember all of that things, those things that I did as a child, and if I remember them, that must be me. So, it kind of is connected to memory sometimes, the sense of a being that has traveled through time, a sense of one who has traveled through time. And so this is a kind of attribution of permanence, even if there's a sense that one came into being at the beginning of one's life and will go out of existence at the end of one's life, there's still an attribution of a being there. And so that is a piece of what the Buddha said is a misunderstanding. There's not that what we think of as that entity that is traveling through time is a process. So many processes, actually, many processes unfolding. So there's a couple of different ways to come into this question, though. There's so many thoughts as I was reflecting on this today, so many ways I can explore this. So I'll just reflect on a few and then we'll see if there's some questions. So there's one question, one possibility of a way to explore this question, seeing that there's not much stable, that things do change. What about a sense of self or what is it that is happening then? So the another thing that we realize is that there's kind of this sense of me that feels so obvious, feels like it just feels like how can it not be? I mean, I'm thinking these thoughts in this mind, that there's, thoughts that arise in this mind that I can remember, that I can plan and I can do things. So there's a sense of an unfolding stream of stuff happening here that's got a coherence to it. Kind of like a river has a coherence to it. I used that analogy a few weeks ago for the sense of self. What is a river? A river is continually changing. There's nothing that you can point to and say, this is the river. You can't point to the water. You can't take a bucket of water out of the river and say, that's the river, because the river is almost defined by its flow. There's never the same water in a particular place at a particular time. You can't say that the stream bed is the river, or the dirt that's kind of in the stream bed, because that's also being washed downstream. And the stream bed itself, that may have a little more stability in a way. We could kind of think about that kind of like the physical body of our own physical body. It changes more slowly in a way, the stream bed, the river bed. But even that can change radically if there's a a major storm or a flood can really radically alter the course of a river. So even the riverbed is not the river. All of the pieces together kind of make the river what we understand conventionally to be river. And we give a river a name, you know, we can go to a river, we can talk about it, we can understand it. It's got some coherence. It's got kind of a process, right? It's got, we can talk about it. We can understand what we mean when we talk about it. But there's no specific thing we can point to and say, that is the river. But we still understand what we mean. So there is this coherent process that we call river. And that, I would say, is true of a being. There's coherent processes unfolding, lawfully unfolding processes of body and mind that are shaped by conditions. It's never the same for any two split seconds. It's continually changing. And yet there's this coherent process that we can talk about. We can conventionally call me, conventionally call this set of processes here, Andrea. And we know what we're talking about when we call a person by their name. You know, we can kind of have senses of kind of giving names to beings. But the name is not the person any more than the name of the river is the river. It's a kind of a convention that lets us communicate. Communication, another one of our processes. So the Buddha talked about a number of processes that kind of make up our being. And in particular, he talked about five processes, and I'm not going to try to do the five aggregates talk tonight, but I'll just kind of give you a brief overview. These five processes, processes of body and mind. The body itself is a process changing continually, and we know this. I mean, we know it from science. We know it from watching ourselves age. We know it from falling down and injuring ourselves and seeing ourselves bleed. We know that the body changes. So it is a process. It is a lawfully conditioned process. It came into being at conception. It grew in particular ways based on the food that we ate. The food that we ate, you know, certain amounts of certain kinds of food would make us grow taller or be different weights. So there's just a whole bunch of things that contribute to that process. It's a process of body unfolding. And then there's processes of mind. The Buddha points to the process of feeling, the feeling process takes in whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The process of perception, which recognizes a process that recognizes experience, that recognizes objects, that recognizes space and time, that recognizes distance, location, things like that. Then there's the process of volition, the process of deciding, of choosing, of shaping experience. And this includes the processes of choice and a whole host of emotions. All of our reactive emotions fall into this category. Our mind states, such as concentration, mindfulness, compassion, wisdom, patience, generosity, all the wholesome and unwholesome states of mind fall into this category. Another thing that falls into this category, the sense of self, is an arising phenomenon that is a formation that is taken to be a sense of self. So even what we tend to this is a big part of the misattribution, that we take that arising phenomenon that is a sense of a feeling of me, and we give it a coherence, we give it a thingness. So that's a little bit of a side. I'll come back to that maybe in a little while. Then the fifth aggregate is consciousness, knowing. And so these five processes are kind of interwoven in our experience. Within our experience, these five processes are happening simultaneously, and they kind of get woven together in a way and feel like me. We can attribute, and one of the understandings that can happen for us, there's kind of two key understandings about the sense of self that happen. One happens earlier in the process, and one happens later in the process of waking up. The first one is that we identify, we have what's called identity view, or a sense of self, that self view that's kind of tied up around these five aggregates, that we identify with the body being self in some way. We identify with the feelings being self in some way. And it may be a sense, there's different ways that we take these five to be self. It might be that we take the body to be me. We might take myself to be in the body. We might take my body to be in me. That one is not one that I tend to do. or we might think the body is mine. Some of the other aggregates we might see, so these are these four different ways we tend to attribute a sense of self to each of these five aggregates. So the Buddha talks about 20 kinds of identity view, and we won't try to go through all of them. But they're just these kind of different ways that we attribute a sense of self. And that attribution is around these individual kind of aggregates. So we might at particular times feel like I am the one who feels, or this feeling that I'm having, this is my feeling, or something like that. So there's different ways that we have a sense of self, different ways that we attribute it. It may not always be tied up with the sense of something being permanent, a thing being permanent, like that feeling being permanent, but there may be a sense that there is an I to whom things are happening, where it feels like that I has a sense of stability. So the kind of the coherent processes, these are the processes at work in our system, these five in our humanness, these five processes at work, they're just unfolding. They're unfolding whether we're awake or asleep. They're unfolding whether we're aware of them or not. They are just processes unfolding, and they are conditioned. They are conditioned by our history, by our choices, the choices that have been made by our being in the past. And this conditioning, this kind of tumbling on of these five processes, that conditioning is a kind of a lawful conditioning. It's not random. So if one of the ways to express this, one of the parts of this conditioning, the Buddha famously says, whatever one frequently ponders becomes the inclination of the mind. And so things that we're exposed to a lot, whether it's things that we do a lot, or whether it's things that as children or parents kind of put us in the field of a lot, those became the inclinations of the mind, the inclinations of the mind and body. And so that's part of the lawful unfolding. And so there is this kind of coherence, you know, the aggregates, the body, this being here, there's a body and feeling and perception and mental formations and consciousness kind of associated with this being. It's kind of like a stream, again, a river, like we may have different rivers kind of coming together. There's apparently, I heard Greg Scharf talk about this in a Dharma talk. There's in where he lives or near where he lives, there, I think there's two rivers that kind of come together, two branches of river, I think, that join in to make the Colorado River. And for a period of time, the two rivers, they look very different. The soil they're traveling through is different. And so as they join, one of them has a color that's kind of more greenish and another that's kind of more brownish. And as they join, they stay kind of coherent for a little while before they get mixed up. And so, you know, there can be, we could think of ourselves as these rivers or streams that are coherent. They're not necessarily getting mixed up. They get mixed up in terms of how we affect each other, for sure. You know, what I frequently ponder, if I put that out into the world, the people around me then ponder it. So, you know, my parents pondered certain things and that affected what I pondered. You know, so our streams influence each other for sure. But there is a kind of a coherence. The feelings arising here are the feelings arising in this set of processes. So there is a kind of coherence. So that may be one, you know, is that a self? You know, there's a, you know, so this tumbling on of body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, the kind of the coherence of that tumbles on and will eventually fall apart at death. This body will disintegrate. And so there will no longer be that coherence anymore for this particular being. There is an understanding that the mental kind of formations, the mental activities continue in a coherence beyond death, coherence in that, you know, there's this kind of arising and passing of phenomena. And so never a thing that's there, but a kind of an energy, we could say, an energy, a momentum, a direction of the mind stream. And that continues into a next life. That is a teaching on karma, a teaching of on rebirth and karma that is part of the Buddhist tradition. I don't think it's necessary to believe that in particular to have an understanding of a sense of not self, to have an understanding of how one can become free of suffering. But that is a piece of the teaching of not self. And there's often the question, you know, well, if there is no self, what gets reborn? You know, what would get reborn? What would come into being in a new body? And the momentum or the stream or the direction of the unfolding. So the potentially some of the proclivities and habits that were cultivated in a prior life would get passed on to the next life. So those frequently pondered things are kind of what gets reborn. But they're not things. So this is one place I think that this question perhaps could be coming from. It's like, okay, if I understand that there's nothing that's kind of solid in this flow, you know, but what is this flow? Well, it's a flow. It's a set of processes tumbling on. We could call that something. The piece that I think is interesting to reflect on in the question here is there any attribution of even a little bit of permanence? So I accept there's no permanent, unchanging I or self. But even if there's a sense that there is something that comes into being and lasts for a little while and then falls apart, even that is an attribution of a little bit of permanence. That sometimes what we think of as things being impermanent is that something was here and now it's not here. And that means it was impermanent. The teaching of impermanence, in my understanding, is actually kind of deeper than that, that there isn't anything here. There are no things that actually exist for any stretch of time. It is continually, that these processes of these aggregates are so continually changing that there's not a split second in which there's a stability in there. So I have more that I could say, but I see that it's kind of late. So I want to see if there's any questions about what I've said already. And I would like to record the questions. So if you're comfortable being recorded speaking into the room, great. And if not, you could chat. You could use the chat. So any thoughts? Yeah, Yan Kui.
This is Yan Kui.
Yan Kui, thank you.
This is my first time here, but I just want to, just the last thing you said is remarkable because it slips out of my mind. And it's like, wait, really? Like nothing? You're saying the teaching is nothing, like no solid thing. It is my working definition is something comes up, something arises, all conditioned things arise and pass away. Things arise and pass away.
Yes, that's what we think of, is things arise and pass away. But that what is coming into being is a continually changing process, and what is passing away is a continually changing process. So there's never a stability in there where it actually takes its thingness and lasts for any stretch of time. And it is mind-blowing. It is, and actually, you know, I think particle physics agrees with this. you know, but what conventionally there are things that come into being, you know, like these bodies came into being, you know, the body came into being, but it's continually growing, you know, it's continually shedding, changing cells, you know, and actually if we think about the things. This can be a fun exploration, actually. The things that we think of as things, do a little mind exploration of how did it come into being? You know, what created it? How did it get created? So you know, even something like an object in the room, a chair. You know, I've got a chair sitting over there. So at one point, parts of that chair were a tree, because it's got some wood in it. And so there was a process. That tree grew and it was cut down at some point. Somebody came along and chopped it into lumber and formed these pieces and then put it into, you know, formed those pieces and then put it together into a chair. And so it's like it had been, when did it start coming into being? You know, did it start coming to being when the tree started growing? Did it start coming into being when somebody actually put it together, nailed the pieces together? Did it start coming into being when the pieces were formed? Did it come into being when all of the pieces were there before it had the cushion on it? So there's this whole process by which this thing comes into being. And conventionally, it lasts for a while. You know, conventionally, it does last for a while. It's sitting here. It's been sitting here for years. It was sitting in my parents' house for years. So, you know, it's got something that we call a thingness, but that thingness is a kind of an attribution that we give to it. In actuality, it is every day losing some paint off the edge of it. The fabric is getting worn and torn. And so it's changing in small ways. It's never the same, never the same thing. What we think of it as the thing, you know, it's like the thing that we think of it as is more of a concept. So the concept is what we apply a concept to something and we attribute a permanence to that concept. And that's true of our sense of self as well. The sense of self, when it arises, is actually a concept. And then we attribute some kind of permanent to that, some kind of thingness to that. Yeah, this is a big topic. Probably we can talk about this next time too, if you want to. Yeah, Beverly,
Yeah, what's the connection between what you're saying and awakening?
So this is a great question. So the sense of self, the sense of self, the mind confused about that is one of the main reasons why there is suffering in the world. The attribution of an I or me who has something or wants something or needs something. It can come from different directions. And this is actually another piece that is useful to reflect on, that what the Buddha's whole journey was about trying to find his way to freedom from suffering. That's what awakening is, freedom from suffering. And understood that the process by which suffering is created, craving leads to clinging, leads to holding, leads to suffering because things are impermanent, unreliable. That same process that leads to that craving and clinging, that ignorance that leads to craving and clinging, that same process is creating a sense of self. And so they're intimately interconnected. When there's a sense of self, there's going to be suffering. When there's suffering, there's going to be a sense of self. Now, it may be that one or the other is more obvious at a particular time. It may be the suffering side is more obvious. If that's what's obvious, if the anger that's happening, arising in the being, if whatever, you know, what reactive emotion is arising and there's suffering around that, you don't have to figure out who is the I who has that in order to make progress around looking at that in order to be curious about, well, what is the feeling? How does it condition the body? How does it condition the experience? So there can be learning around and freedom can happen through exploring the suffering side of things. But sometimes the sense of self is very obvious, and the kind of the sense of I need this, or I'm right, or I'm a failure, you know, the various flavors of I am are where it feels like the suffering is. And that's a good time to explore that. But it is the exploration around the sense of self, wherever it comes up, is an exploration of what's in the way of awakening. And we find our way to awakening by seeing what's in the way of it really clearly. And when we see it really clearly, our system begins to understand this is a construction and it doesn't have to be. The mind wisdom kind of begins to kind of let those habits and patterns go when they are clearly seen as in the way of freedom. So it's time to stop. Yeah, more on the topic next week. And you're welcome to submit questions. This one was put in, you know, the information about this event each week has the link to submit a question in advance. So you're welcome to do that too. So thanks. And
thank you.
Let me stop the recording.